action movie survivor. When I'm not busy trying to avoid massive superhero battles with people getting thrown through walls or dodging giant robots about to step on me, I'm listening to the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. Be sure to check out Part-Time Fanboy at parttimefanboy.com for somewhat weekly podcasts and reviews about various fanboy-related subjects. Also, be sure to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Do it now, because the Robopocalypse is coming!
Part-Time Fanboy.
Than a locomotive.
I'm here to be part time. Parttimefanboy.com.
All right, it's time for punishment with the Punisher. All right, this is Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn, and I am here again with my friend Ian Scheller. And we are returning from last week's episode to finish the punishment that is the Punisher, Frank Castle, the Punisher. This is where we go over the final six episodes of the Punisher. We kind of went over the first six last week, but, you know, having re-listened to it, because I'm the one that edits this thing and I have to listen to it and then listen to it again and again and again. We did see each other on Thanksgiving. Ian and I do share Thanksgiving with each other when our families are both in California A and not traveling back east. So we discussed a little bit about how far I'd gotten. I think I was only up to by Thanksgiving, like episode 8 10. Or something? Yeah, maybe 10. Yeah. And then we watched the last two on Thanksgiving night after everyone left. But yeah, you're right. But we only spoke like in generalizations kind of in our last episode, having listened over, and we were kind of just settling in with the feel and what our thoughts were about, like what the show was kind of talking about and stuff.
Right.
So I feel like in this episode, and you were saying this as well, that maybe we should focus a little bit more on the plot. And the final six episodes, they just kick into high gear. For me, obviously, I said last episode, for me, it took up to like three episodes to be like, okay, things are gelling, like it's happening, you know. And then I think like once you get past that, the sort of where the traitor, you know, spoilers for anyone who's listening, we do spoil things, the traitor who is awaiting, you know, in the Punisher cast to be revealed, I think that's when things finally start like taking motion. What do you think?
I mean, once that hits, you realize, I know you said you realized it a lot earlier, but
yeah,
I think once that kind of drops into the whole thing, it shifts gears. Like it's almost like it kind of goes into this drive. If you're in a car chase, this is after you've been three or four blocks and you've got like a wide open stretch of road where you can gun it. And it is a great ending to episode 6 that sort of, it almost like resets the entire perspective of the viewing experience. So yeah, I agree completely on that.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. You know, basically what happens is, you know, again, spoilers, here it comes, you know, the Punisher, Frank Castle's best friend from the Marines, it's revealed that he is actually working with the CIA scumbag that is that killed the Punisher's family in Central Park. And he is also sort of behind the machinations to sort of hunt down Frank Castle. But he didn't know that Frank was alive. Nobody knew, right?
I think the only one that knew was Curtis.
Oh, you think Curtis knew that he was alive?
I think it said early in the beginning, he said he got him he got the Punisher a new passport and a new name, because remember he was going by a different name.
By that time he knows. Billy knows. Billy Russo knows.
Well, yeah, he suspected, and he visited Curtis, and yeah, I think by that time they just they start to know, and which is a big problem, because if looking at the big picture, because we didn't really talk about plot, you have this rogue, I guess, the second in command of the CIA, it seemed like the way that they painted it, basically was doing a drug smuggling and assassination operation.
Yeah.
And which he claimed he was doing to help the United States of America.
Well, he was running the heroin operation to fund his clandestine, you know, stuff. And that's why he sort of sees it as, you know, it's good for the country. You know, what I'm doing is good. And obviously most, you know, sane Americans would be like, no, that's not good. That's just not good.
Not good for the country.
Yeah,
so,
you shouldn't be doing that.
So you have that going on, unbeknownst to the head of the CIA, who's on her way out.
Yeah, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, who it was great to see act.
Ooh, yeah, great acting there.
Yeah.
Very powerful, beautiful woman. Mm-hmm. But she did a fantastic job, I thought, but making it believable that she was a straight shooter.
Yeah.
It would have been very easy to have that part, I think, in a lesser actress's hands, be sort of doubtable, if that's a word.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought she handled it so well. You have this. Basically, this is the plot. You know, the whole plot, which you find, like, I felt like we find out, like, they could kind of give it to you in bits and pieces. Yeah. But you finally find out Frank Castle is supposed to be dead. So is. What's his buddy's name?
Which one?
The guy he's working with,
Micro.
His buddy. Yeah, Micro's supposed to be dead, right? Yeah. And Frank has decided to kill everyone that's been involved with this operation, but he doesn't really know who's behind it until much later as well.
Well, so, right? I mean, yeah, we should definitely lay out the plot, because we're talking in generalizations. Basically, Frank Castle, in the beginning of the series, is hiding out in New York City after the events of Punisher Season 2. Everyone thinks Frank Castle died in a big boat explosion, except for Karen Page. She's the only one, which I rewatched that scene on Daredevil. I went back through Daredevil Season 2 to try and figure out, like, why do they think he's dead? I couldn't remember, because I knew that he showed up at the end of Season 2 on the rooftop. And he is basically on a rooftop, and Karen's the only one that sees him. And then he, like, disappears into the darkness, sort of like never to be seen again. The Punisher does. So everyone
shoots up a bunch of ninjas and disappears.
Yeah, he does. He does shoot up a bunch of ninjas before he leaves to help Daredevil out.
Yeah.
And it's that's kind of an awkward scene in Season 2. But regardless, Frank Castle is kind of hiding out, doing construction work, you know, in New York City. And basically, as things sort of unfurl during the series, you find out that Frank and some of his friends were involved in a CIA clandestine operation in Afghanistan, where they were sort of like hunter killers. They were like assassins. And they're part of the person that was running them. His name was Curtis was his best friend. What was the guy's, the CIA guy's name? Rollins, excuse me.
Yes.
Curtis is his friend that runs the sort of veterans group. And basically Rollins was the head of the death squad, you know, that they were running, but he was also running drugs in order to fund the operations in Afghanistan. So anyway, what ends up happening is there's this guy who he calls himself Micro, David Lieberman, right? Mm-hmm. And he was an analyst at, I can't remember if he was the CIA or someplace. He was at Homeland, or I can't remember. But he was an analyst, and he gets a video sent to him that basically shows this death squad killing an Afghani police officer.
Correct.
Because Curtis has been given false intelligence, which he, not Curtis, I keep calling him Curtis, Rollins has been given false intelligence. And basically, Micro was an analyst and sort of faked his own death to his family, and has been trying to track down Frank Castle because for some reason he knows that Frank Castle's still alive. Maybe because he has cameras all over the city or whatever. He can hack into the sort of...
everything.
Yeah, everything. And he tries to get Frank Castle to join him as an ally in righting the wrongs that this squad has done. And he knows that Frank Castle is responsible for the murder of this guy. But he, for somehow he knows that Frank wants to set what he did, what the wrongs that he did right. So the whole series is basically Micro, the Punisher, Frank Castle, mm-hmm. sort of figuring out who leaked them the tape, you know, who is behind the death of Frank's family, because Frank, at the beginning of the series, thought he had all his sort of things tied up. He thought he had killed everyone that had anything to do with his family, but then he finds out that it's part of a much bigger plot.
Right.
Yeah, so him and Micro are tracking stuff down, and in the meantime, you have a Homeland agent, Dinah Madani, and her partner, Sam Stein, and they are, where she is looking into the death of the Afghani policeman because she had promised him, I think, maybe safe passage to the U.S. or safety, and he ended up getting killed, and she knows that it was through some weird government squad, right. but she doesn't know how it happened. And she's so basically like all these people's, you know, sort of lives intersect, and mixed in there is a couple of the Punisher's really good friends, like Curtis, who runs a veterans group, you know, sort of PTSD sort of encounter group with other veterans where they talk stuff out. And then you've got Billy, who was Frank Castle, the Punisher's best friend, when they were Marines or Special Forces or whatever it is they were. And so, yeah, all these things sort of intertwine. Things get messy. But the long and short of it is that you're sort of trying to figure out this giant conspiracy theory and why Micro and Frank Castle are tied up in it and how everyone else kind of you know, fits into the mix. And it really ends up like, it's really interesting because I was thinking, and it's something I say on the podcast, this is really interesting, but to me, this is interesting. the fact that I feel like there's been a lot of criticism about like Marvel shows, particularly the Netflix shows, in that maybe they don't need to be 12 episodes or 13 episodes. Maybe they should only be 8, because there's definitely some that, and I thought this about Jessica Jones and sometimes a little bit during Daredevil, where there's a couple episodes that are kind of like filler and like wasted space. And I feel like The Punisher is the first one where I felt like nothing was wasted. Maybe the first two episodes were a little slow for me, but other than that, I felt like everything was like dead on. I didn't feel like there was any wasted time. Once it sort of kicked in, like during episode three for me, I was fully engaged. And, you know, once I have my wife going like, are we going to watch The Punisher tonight? Are we going to watch The Punisher? And then the sort of night or two after The Punisher is over, she's going, what are we going to watch? The Punisher's over. You know, we're missing the experience of, you know, watching The Punisher. It's done something right.
I think, too, it's a new form of storytelling these long. I mean, when is the last time in the history of mankind that stories were being told over 13 straight hours?
I mean, you mean binged and stuff like that? Yeah, I mean, that whole binging experience is very...
Yeah, new. So I think that, not that they had the same writers on every show, but in the show's defense in general, you know, this is like really long form, very interesting storytelling. I mean, those, you know, old Cecil B. DeMille movies, you know, those had a shorter runtime where they would like take an intermission when you would go to the movies. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I felt like every scene in this thing was super intense. And once you're finally clued, but the weird thing is I don't feel like the story was fully revealed until literally like the last episode.
Really?
Like, I felt there was enough cliffhangers and enough subplots that I was still guessing what was going on. But it's almost like the physical attributes of the combat and the danger carried me like through each plot point, you know. Yeah. So I kept watching, almost as if they overload us with an angle of the story. But then, just as you're going to be like, wait a minute, and like start to think about it, you just see Punisher waste like a bunch of people, or there's, you know, the bomb scene. They get into the homegrown terrorist plot, which we should talk about, you know, and it's pretty amazing. I think that's why it's so gripping, and I think it's very intelligent. And I'm not saying I'm intelligent, but I find my, it took days for me to just kind of wind down from the whole experience, you know?
It is really, really intense. And, I mean, I feel, again, after the third episode, it really, really becomes a roller coaster ride. And it's like all things are firing. And it's very interesting the way it plays out. Like this, that sort of a PTSD group. It's very interesting because they sort of introduce this character. I can't remember the character's name, but he's in the group and he's sort of supposed to be the NRA sort of like Trump supporter, you know, kind of like very cardboard cutout character. And I'm like, oh boy, as soon as that character is introduced, I was very much like, but it's funny how that character serves a purpose to sort move another character's journey, on, you know, his way. And it's so well thought out the way everything plays out, because there's characters that you think are going to be wasted and they really end up being, or just sort of filler in a way. And they really sort of end up being very important to the whole narrative. It's really impressive the way it plays out, especially, you know, with the character Lewis, who is played by an actor named Daniel Weber. That whole subplot could be played out so badly on another show, but here it becomes interesting and compelling, and it's fascinating, and really, really, by the time it plays out, really tragic, you know, really sad to me.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because it's kind of like they pull a bait and switch there.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, this guy likes guns, and he's a rebel rouser, and he feels neglected, and he's trying to get all the soldiers in the group to almost like revolt. And no one's really buying it. He's kind of out there on his own. But what's so brilliant is, and I think this is actually the signs of homegrown terrorism, is they always say the signs are there.
Yeah.
And if you look slowly, the way Lewis's character builds, you see him sleeping in his backyard.
Yeah.
You see, and building a kind of a war tent where, you know, he feels comfortable in, because he was in, or we're assuming he was in, some heavy combat, or he has, wars affected him in probably the worst way, even though he's has all his limbs. It doesn't look like he was injured, but it looks like his mind took the worst toll.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely, this guy emerges as a major pain in the ass for everybody.
Yeah.
Not just the Punisher, but like the United States, innocent people, you name it. This guy became a homegrown terrorist through and being influenced by this this other character, who turned out to be sort of a phony.
Yeah. Oh, very much a phony. A complete liar, as a matter of fact. Barely, not even really a veteran. To tell you, you know what I mean? And just a guy that would sit in on the group and sort of, you know, you know, sort of poke at the sort of the beehive, you know, of all the veterans. And you know, like you said, a rabble rouser, somebody who was like, oh, you know, we got to take charge of this country. And it was better in the old days. And it's revealed, you know, that that he's just this big phony. And at first, when that character was introduced, I remember specifically saying to my wife, saying, oh, this is cheap. Like, I feel like this is cheap. I feel like this is lame. Like, you know, and then when you see what develops out of that and what he sort of, you know, you think he's going to sort of be this like major character, or not even a major character, but a character that pops up with this stupid viewpoint every once in a while.
Right.
And what he is really, he just ends up being a catalyst, to another storyline that ends up being much sadder and more painful to watch and just, you know, harsher to go through than anything else on the show, you know?
I think too, especially because we've divided up our, you know, report here on the Punisher into two parts, we have sort of an opportunity to go a little bit further, you know, into this aspect of it. Because how long would you say they stretched the Lewis arc? That was like 3 or 4 episodes,
right? Well, it ends. Oh, well, I mean, he's kind of introduced. Lewis is introduced in one of the first two episodes for like a bit, but they stretch it. The last episode that he's in, Front Toward Enemy, which is one of the best episodes of the whole show.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
He's there for a good 9 episodes, but it doesn't feel like dragged out. The other thing that I noticed about this show, I felt like every character, every story was very well balanced. Didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you never felt like one aspect of it was on screen for too much. Just when you thought you were going to get too much of Frank Castle visiting with Micro's family.
Yep.
You know, even that takes another turn where you're like, did you think that was going to happen, where there starts to be like emotional, like sexual tension from Micro's current wife, wife towards the Punisher, because she hasn't had a guy around the house.
Yeah.
And she doesn't know that, you know, Micro's even alive. So she figures, oh, I hit this guy with my car and now he's fixing everything, so I might as well. Maybe he's maybe he wants more, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting because, yeah, it's that played out very much in a way the way I thought it was going to at first. Because at first you're like, oh, this is going to go this way.
Yeah.
But then you're like, oh, Frank Castle respects Micro. There's no way he's going to do that. He knows that he's watching from the beginning. And then it happens that she's the one who pushes it forward. And it's like, whoa. And it is very, like, this show is very good at making you uncomfortable in so many different ways.
Right.
Where you're just like, oh no, what is going to happen here? And the reaction, Micro's reaction when he gets drunk and he's just like, oh, sure, of course this was going to happen. That was just amazing. But the thing that impressed me the most about the whole thing of that family was when the kid is becoming a bully and stealing the skateboard. I've seen in TV shows or movies that scene where the man confronts the son and or a boy or something, and he's like, and the son's kind of like a bully and he's like tough and he's like, oh, I'm gonna hurt this kid and I'm gonna show him that he's not the toughest and that'll get him to like wise up or whatever. But the way that scene played out, where Frank like literally takes a knife to the kid's throat,
and then
the kid goes, "Do it! I just want you to do it." I was like, that was totally unexpected. Like, I did not expect that to happen. Like, you would expect the kid to be like, "Don't hurt me, please. I don't want to be bad," or something like that. Like an after school special or something. And it does not go that way. And the look on Frank's face when that happens is unbelievable, because he's like, whoa, I may have gone too far with this. And he was not expecting it to go that way either.
Right. And that's the whole thing, to bring it back to what we were talking about, the Lewis arc, is that just when you think you have it figured out where the thing's going, like, would we expect in this show to see someone like much worse than the Punisher. Like that guy Lewis was such a threat that he made the Punisher really seem like a good guy.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this is what's so crazy too. It's almost like they started carving out real human aspects of the character, the Punisher. I feel like they pushed the character further than it's ever gone before because they give you those different aspects. So here's a guy in Lewis who has completely lost his mind and has a lot of similar training Frank Castle has had. Not as complete or as rigorous as the Marine training, but here's a guy who becomes more dangerous. And the thing about the Punisher is, for the most part, he does still have most of his faculties, you know, mentally, except the fact that he just wants to kill. He wants to just make everyone pay.
Yeah.
So, and it just echoes through all those scenes you just talked about with Micro's wife initiating the almost a traitor type turn when, you know, and then you feel sympathy for that. And it's the kid who says, you know what, kill me. Like, why, you know, he misses his daddy. He's gone off the deep end.
Yeah.
And again, they do that same thing. So it's like the writing was so consistent. And it built this world that was like crystal clear.
It's really funny. You nailed it on the head though, Ian, because the thing is that they keep doing. And in the beginning of the show with the sort of the Latin guy who's on the construction thing, you see that coming a mile away, which is the very sort of stereotypical, oh, hi, superhero makes a friend in his secret identity, friend gets bullied or assaulted, superhero comes to save him, and that kind of what humanized him. But the thing that they keep doing with Frank Castle, and it's not in this show, and again, I haven't read every Punisher book ever, but the ones that I have read, he's very one-dimensional character. But in this, they keep moving him into situations that make him be humanized. They humanize him in so where he has to force to become softer or open or sympathetic in a way. Not in a sort of, you know, mamby-pamby, hippy-dippy or whatever kind of way, but in a way where he just realizes like, oh, this person is in pain, or oh, this person needs me. And that stuff in and of itself in the show is more gratifying or opens him up as a person to be identified with than any sort of violence that he could commit against a bad guy or bad people.
Yeah, well, that's a good point because it lets you see, and it's kind of revealed later in the series in the second half that this guy had a fun in war. He enjoys it.
Yeah.
That's what he knows. It's he excels at it. If you're a Marine, you're taking on a lot more than most people would in the Army.
Yeah.
And he enjoys it. That's what he loves to do. And the worst part is he – I think was it – actually, there's a quote from – I don't know if you saw the Thomas Jane web-only Punisher movie.
Yes, I have seen that. Yeah.
And there's a quote in that where – the gentleman who plays Hellboy is the bartender.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says he came home from the war fine, but he got hurt as a civilian. He became paralyzed. And it's almost – that's the same thing with Frank in that the reason he's on his mission to do what he's doing has nothing to do with what happened with him in combat.
Yeah.
He loves being a soldier.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is a lot of humanity left there. I am glad that they illustrated that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I love the bit, you know, early on in the series when they show him and Billy together, you know, going through their missions or whatever, and they're sort of talking about like everything they're going to do when they get home, and you can see that Frank Castle is very much looking forward to being with his family, you know.
But
there's even a part like sort of in the end where Frank is being tortured where the realization comes to him. Almost in a way, you know, where she's saying like, come home or something like that. Be with me, you know, sort of in the whatever purgatory nether place where, you know, every person hallucinates on TV shows, you know, right before they're going to die. But I thought it was a really, first of all, how messed up is that whole torture sequence where basically he's being tortured in real life. And in the meantime, he's fantasizing about having sex with his wife. Like, what? Like, if that isn't some messed up psychology going on there, you know, like, I was trying to figure out, like, is he trying to go to a happy place?
Well, yeah,
Or is he equating the torture with pleasure? You know what I'm saying? The pain with the pleasure of, like it could be so many things. Like, I think the surface thing is very much like, oh, yes, I'm sort of going to a happy place to be with my wife so I don't have to experience the torture. But deep down inside, I'm thinking, like, is he equating the pain of this sort of, like, to the pleasure of love? Like, and then as you go on, she's like, stay with me, come home with me or something. And he says something to the effect of, I am home. And at that point, it sort of, like, hits you like, oh, damn. Like, he is home. Like, he is at home in the pleasure and, in the pain of all the stuff that has been happening to him. And that torture sequence is, like, one of the most horrifying ones I've seen in a while.
The aftermath of it's quite fantastic.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy too. Once he gets out, you know.
But... Oh, once he gets out, I was yelling, "Stop, Punisher! Stop!" The havoc he was wreaking on these people.
Well, it's like the moment that you knew that the moment that you saw Rollins inject that the adrenaline, and I was like, "Oh God, you're in so much trouble now!" Like,
yeah,
just like so bad. But I just thought that was very well played out, that whole dream sequence and stuff. And you're right. It sort of is revealed that, I mean, it's very much sort of that, I don't want to say cliche, but that thing of, like, the soldier not knowing what else to do with his life, right?
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's it. I mean, it's like, hey, this guy enjoys being a soldier. That's kind of who he is. That's his identity. And, you know, he might be shallow in that way, it's interesting because that, as he's getting tortured, he's thinking of his wife, and it's completely black. There's no setting. It's just him and his wife, and I didn't see it that way, but now that you say it, that could be a tactic when you're getting tortured, is to put yourself in a place, you know, that doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
But I think it was a double sort of meaning, because he was sort of choosing between going to be with his family or staying where he was. So, yeah. Man, I mean, the way that he got out of stuff, and it was foreshadowed in the beginning, because at the end of this series, at this point, they're slowly revealing a plan that the Punisher and Micro had for them to get the upper hand. And that eventually all came to fruition, I felt.
Oh, yeah.
You know, didn't you? And they set – it was like Home Alone. I was saying it was like Home Alone, but like a real violent version of it in a way.
Yeah, it was a really – well, that was just a really well-played-out, good setup towards the end, how all of that sort of unfurled. And, I mean, I just – really love that whole, you know, where Micro sort of finally gets reunited with that whole bit was just like terrific. Where Micro gets reunited with his family and he's like, I told Frank I wasn't going to tell you, but then he sort of like caves in and he's like, okay, you know, I'm not doing it to screw you. I'm doing it so that I don't screw Frank, but I think he really needs a lot of help. And, I mean, I just thought that the way that everything played out, you know, with Agent Madani was just really fantastic. The way that they were able to sort of, you know, help Micro, help his family, set Micro up as sort of being killed, because like when he got shot in the back, we were like yelling at the screen, like, no,
really?
Like, yeah, I thought he was dead for a second, and then you know, it's revealed that he's alive. But that whole bit of like, it was just great the way it played out, because Frank, like he couldn't get out of it himself. He was being tortured right. within an inch of his life. And he plays some sort of like psychological game with his pal Billy and Rollins, where he gets yeah. them to sort of like play against each other. And Billy ends up sort of like cutting the binds a bit that are holding him. And right. that's when just everything just goes to like Pulp Fiction, Django Unchained madness, you know, like Quentin Tarantino insanity, because once, you know, he gets free, like all bets are off. What he does to Rollins is just like not cool. Like, just like, I mean, I've seen a lot of horror movies. I like horror movies. I like Walking sure. Dead. But like that moment where he's just stabbing the hell out of Rollins, I was just like, oh my God, how long is he going to keep doing that? You know,
like they really kept it up. There was again, no apologies there. And that's when I was like, okay, Punisher, stop. Like you could stop doing that.
I think he's dead now. Yeah.
I think he's dead. And it is interesting is, but I felt like, why did you think, Russo unclipped him? Was it that Russo wanted to make sure he would get out alive, and he knew Frank wasn't going to kill him?
I think that Russo saw that Rollins was going to be the thing that was going to be his downfall, because at that point Rollins was kind of out of control, and right. I think, you know, Billy, he saw that at that point, like, that Rollins was expendable, that Rollins was going to be no good to him, and that he was basically Rollins' lapdog, and that he had to figure out a way to get out of this situation. And I think that he saw that if the Punisher could be released and that Rollins' death could be blamed on Frank Castle, then he could get out of there scot-free and just be like, he thought he caught the Punisher, but he didn't. The Punisher escaped and killed him. So I think that was mostly, I think it was part of it to like help him get away, but I think he needed a way to kill Rollins that he wouldn't have his hands dirty. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
I sort of felt that way, like, Rollins just kept getting more unhinged and unhinged, and man, did he get his ass kicked or what?
He totally got his ass kicked. But he totally deserved it, too. I mean, as far as Rollins goes, the scene with and that actor, his name is Paul Scholes or Schulz. His scenes with Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio were fantastic. I mean, the way that he turned stuff around on her, and what you had said, the way that she plays like very strong and very sort of surprised, particularly mm-hmm. in the beginning, you know, how things have been going, like when she hasn't been looking. I believed her. I mean, I really believed that she did not know what was happening, and that she was like, holy moly, like what the hell happened? Like, how did it get this out of control? You know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Those scenes were crystal clear, and they definitely, again, just glued up the plot and made it even more tighter than it already was.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were fantastic. I mean, I found something interesting at the end when, you know, Madani's been shot in the head. Frank comes in and makes like a joke. Like, hey, you took one in the head. Like,
yeah.
Did you find that odd? Like, I was like, wow, he really thinks this is fun.
Well, I think he was kind of impressed. He's like, oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you finally sort of got your hands dirty. Because that's sort of very much a theme with him, too, is particularly with Micro. He's like, oh, you call a guy, right? Like, your wife says you call a guy. Like, Frank is very much a guy who likes to get in there and get his hands dirty. And I think that the way that he sees Homeland and Madani is very much sort of like trying to move around chess pieces and stuff, using people for their own purposes. And he's not like that. He's just going in, he's taking care of business, and he's going to do it himself, which is to his detriment. You know, he's very much sort of that, particularly in the beginning of the show, he's very much that kind of guy, like, I got to take care of it myself. Like, I'm going to...
Right.
Like, there's a lot of times in this show, and, you know, Billy getting him out of the torture is a perfect example, where Frank Castle should quite literally be dead, you know, because he's
many
so thick-headed,
times.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's so many times, like, Micro helps him out, or just something out of like weird circumstance helped him out. Mm-hmm. Like, and he's helped out. And it's not really, a lot of the times it's not really because of his own brains. It's just luck or somebody looking out for him. You know, there were definitely times where I had a problem with Frank's character where it was just, he was so stubborn, so thick headed that it was right. Like, really just freaking grow up, man. Like particularly in his interaction with Micro. I'm like, don't you get it by now that this guy's trying right. to help you, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, they played that part consistently, but maybe there was a little too long before he actually trusted him. But you know, who's he going to trust? I mean, if you have your whole family wiped out, who the hell are you going to really trust?
Well, I also think that speaks to sort of the overarching theme of the whole show, which is, you know, surviving war, PTSD. Mm-hmm. You know, he's obviously a victim of a bit of that, if not because of what happened to him in the war, but right. what happened to him with his family right in front of him. Right. So he's definitely got trust issues. You're right that there's no reason he should be trusting anybody. But there's definitely a lot of times where I think that he really does the stupid thing. And yeah. it's like he just gets out by the skin of his ass, you know?
Yeah. I think that's just part of the Punisher.
True.
Lore, in a way. You know, defeating the odds that way.
Yeah.
I mean, what did you think about where they wrapped it up? I mean, where do you... Are they going to do a Punisher 2 right away? What do you think is going
to
happen?
I don't know if anything's been announced, but what's interesting to me is, well, first of all, before we even get to that, we have to sort of get to the final climax, you know, Frank and Billy in Central Park.
Oh, my God.
Because it's been revealed that Billy actually knew what was going to happen to his family. And at that point, the Punisher is, well, you're going to die. You know, he's being tortured. He's strapped to a chair. Like, this is the sort of thing that just, you know, he's like, I'm going to kill you. And you're like, you're not really in any position. Like that's the sort of thing where I'm very much, he gets out of sort of that torture trap through no ingenuity of his own, you know?
None.
It's Billy that decides. I mean, well, maybe you could sort of say that maybe Frank was playing them psychologically against each other, but there's a part of me that feels like he's not smart enough to do that.
Well, Frank was smart enough to trigger the broadcast system so that Homeland could get in there, because that's what ultimately happened, right?
That's right.
That was sort of his plan the whole time. He knew he was going to have to get punished himself. So, eventually it looked like Russo could have gotten out of there, actually. And he did. But then Frank sort of knew that Russo was then going to go after Curtis.
Yeah.
And almost you have like almost a Punisher versus Punisher thing going on.
Yeah.
Because if anyone was as close to his equal, it would be Russo. As far as combat training. And so it's almost, that became really interesting too. So Russo visits Curtis. You know, nearly, you think Curtis is going to, if he hasn't died already, this is going to be the scene where he gets killed.
Poor Curtis. I mean, oh my God. Talk about a guy who didn't ask for any of this and just got, you know, continually beat up and shot at and tortured.
Yeah. And so they make, the Punisher makes a pact with, heads off Russo, has him in his sights from the rooftop into Curtis's apartment where Russo sort of holding Curtis hostage, but they connect on the phone and they set a date and a time to meet, which happens to be the carousel and the location of where Frank lost his family.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, it really seemed childish to be like, hey, I'm not going to shoot you and just fucking end this now. Yeah. Let's meet on the playground. after school, it really felt like that.
Well, it's funny because Billy Russo, he just could have left, tried to escape, but he was so obsessed with getting even with Frank that he hunts Curtis down, and then they again do have this sort of showdown in Central Park. But it's a great, great moment. You know, I mean, Billy Russo kidnaps these two kids, these poor teenagers, who work at the carousel. And then, you sort of have like an all-out shootout brawl. And at first, it seems like it's not going very well for Frank, right?
Oh, man. I think this was amazing because Russo attacks the psychological aspect of Frank because he knows he's damaged that way.
Yeah.
If there's ever a chink in the Punisher's armor, it's that.
Yeah.
So he basically sets up the same scenario of that Frank lost his family under by kidnapping a few kids on site. Yeah. I think I don't know if he made them bloody. It looked like he made bloody shirts or something.
Yeah, it looked like he, I don't know if he cut them or just, I don't know what it was, but.
It didn't appear to me.
Bleeding. There was blood.
Yeah, they were bleeding. He straps them to the carousel. He sends them around the carousel while he's talking to Frank and telling him to save these kids, which in this situation are his kids.
Yeah.
And eventually, man, so Frank. The Punisher actually goes on the carousel with his gun like, you know, brandished, and
he kind of starts having like flashbacks a bit, right?
Oh yeah, I think he was struggling hard. It seemed like he was really struggling to just keep aim.
Yeah.
And what was crazy was, what did he do? Did he just take a good shot and eventually?
I mean, I can't remember the actual how it got turned around, but I mean, he does get the upper hand. And at that point, one of the most disturbing moments in the series happens, which is basically, and it's really funny because I ended up looking up Jigsaw after I watched the whole series because I didn't want any spoilers. And Jigsaw's name in the comics is Billy Russo. And
that's,
I'm like,
great.
Oh, okay. That's, I'm great. Glad I didn't look it up because then it would have been completely spoiled for me. But
right.
It has a completely different origin. But, I mean, the moment where the Punisher grabs Billy Russo by the face and just slams him into the glass of the mirror of the carousel and just slides it down, that sound effect and, like, just, like, the scream. I was just like, oh, my God. Like, I mean, this is sort of like his Joker. But the thing is, with Batman, it was an accident. He didn't mean to knock him off the chemical vat. And, you know, with the Punisher, he's like, every time you look at yourself in the mirror, you're going to know it's me. And it's sort of a brilliant twist on the character. It's a brilliant take. What they do is brilliant with the writing because of the fact that what ends up happening is that the Punisher has hurt him so badly, he goes into a coma. And they say, like, well, he may never wake up. He may wake up and not know who he is. He may wake up and know who he is, but not what he's doing there. Like, they open up all these options in case they need to sort of recast that part, because they're going to, if that character does come back, he's going to have to be in makeup, right? And so you could completely just recast that role with a different actor if you needed to.
Yeah, I hope they don't.
Yeah, no, me too.
I hope they don't, because this guy's awesome.
He's really
good. That was, just when you think the scene before with Punisher thumbing a gentleman's eyeballs out was enough. You get this.
Yeah.
Punisher scraping someone's face against carousel glass.
Yes.
I mean, you
He's not
really.
A nice guy.
No, and you really felt sorry for Billy Russo at that point. You're like, did he deserve that? You know, of course
I don't know.
He did.
He might have deserved that. Yeah,
of course he did. And
at that point,
I was sort
was
of
no
waiting to see if they would do
eyes.
The Jigsaw thing, and I think they were smart to set it up because, really, besides the Kingpin, Jigsaw seems to be the Punisher's arch nemesis.
Yeah,
I mean, it's one hell of a setup, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really good slow burn for Billy Russo's sort of like transformation into, you know, the villain called Jigsaw or whatever. But, you know, sort of getting to your point regarding the ending, I mean, it's interesting because this could be seen as just one giant movie, because basically it ends up with Frank finally deciding to sort of come to terms with what's gone on with him and joining Curtis's soldier sort of survival group, the PTSD therapy group. And it sort of ends abruptly with him in a therapy session. But I liked it. I liked the way that it sort of kind of gives the character a bit of hope and redemption and sort of possibly giving him the ability to rejoin society in some way. And because of that, it seems like, oh, you could just end the Punisher this way. Because it really makes me think, you know, this series had a lot to say about a lot of things, a lot of underlying messages, a lot of, you know, in your face messages, a lot of, you know, PTSD, war, what we do in war, criminals, you know, spying on the public, you know, just like all these things that are going on in our society that our government is doing that we may not, you know, see as particularly good for us as citizens. But the thing of it is, what do you do with the second season? How can you make a second season as impactful, as good, as meaningful as this? Because this had so much stuff going on with it. And to me was probably, and I said it in the previous episode, I think it's probably the most important and probably the most intelligent of all the Marvel shows.
I would agree with that, I think.
Because of what it addresses. I mean, I still like Daredevil more because I actually like Matt Murdock more as a character. But I have to say that I feel like this show actually says something and carries stuff on its back that none of the others have.
Oh, absolutely. It's almost like a crossover show. And maybe the next show could be him doing what you were sort of expecting in the beginning.
Just killing criminals?
You have the whole mob thing. I mean, the whole Jigsaw becomes a part of the mob. So that stuff was almost left untouched. I mean, he took out a bunch of people in the beginning.
Yeah.
But you didn't get any of the mob stuff. And that's a whole nother chapter. So you could get, you know, a very interesting thing with that, or, you know, does he make an appearance in Daredevil 3?
I really the thing of it is if he does become sort of a fighting the mob character that could very easily just dissolve into another vigilante show. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I mean, we have Daredevil for that. There's tons of TV shows like that. You know, so, I mean, I just think that this particular series of The Punisher touched on some very interesting, special things, very important things.
Right.
And you know, things that we all sort of need to think about and that not a lot of other shows are addressing in the way that The Punisher is, because I think The Punisher is not glamorizing these things. That's the other thing I wanted to say. I think The Punisher is very much sort of addressing a lot of this stuff head on and going like, guys, this isn't good. Like what the government is doing to these soldiers, you know, the way soldiers are coming back and not being appreciated or taken care of, that's not good. The way the government is spying on us, that's not good. You know, guns in society. That episode with Karen Page where she's interviewing the senator, like that was really interesting. And it was really smart of them to sort of make Karen the pro-gun person. You know, you know, have her points, because obviously if there is one character in this sort of cinematic in this TV Marvel universe that's going to carry a gun, it's probably going to be her, being what she, you know, because of what she's seen, you know?
Right. That was a good choice, too. It actually kind of tripped me out because I was like, did they just make her the, you know, again? Again, they kind of pulled the bait and switch on you where, just when you think you know what's happening stereotypically, you're just assuming, and they're like, nope, she's the one that's got a permit, and she's the one that's carrying in New York, which is really, that's really tough to get that.
I'm sure.
It is. I think, you know, because she said she was, I think you do have to have permission from the police department in New York.
Yeah, she even said that the police knew about it or something. Yeah.
And I think they threw that in there because that's how it should be everywhere.
Perhaps.
And the thing is, too, it's like if you get, not that I'm going to get into a huge gun debate, but it's like hey, if you like guns and you're responsible with them, yeah, you should have them. 100% you should have them.
Yeah.
It's just the idiots that aren't. So, and the thing is, if you're a responsible gun owner, you're going to be responsible. And if, I guess, there's some extra information people know about you, but, you know, you won't really care if you're a responsible gun owner.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Because you're, you know, you'd be willing to, and I've heard a lot of gun owners talk like that, where they do want more, they do want, you know, more laws and more protection and more regulation. You look at a lot of the country music band that was playing that show out in Vegas. Those, I think one of their guitarists came out and said, hey, something needs to change. Now nothing has. And, you know, even I reminded my wife, even under Obama, Sandy Hook happened, and look what we got. Nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
So it
but he was faced with the Republican Congress that stalled anything that he wanted to do. So you've basically got one party that is holding up the, you know, the sort of, you know, not to get political, but the banner for the NRA, you know, which is so, pulling the strings on that debate.
Sure. So, and I think you're right to say the show is sort of saying certain things without coming out really political. It's sort of presenting, it's presenting these issues as facts almost.
Yeah. And letting you sort of make the decision.
Yeah. And giving you both sides clearly of what a possible argument could be.
Yeah. And I didn't even think it was so in your face. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah. And that's again, the amazing part of that writing to do that.
Yeah. And the direction and the performing, because I feel like that very much, it was very conversational. It wasn't like, well, this, and then you, and then you. Like, again, there's other shows that would do a scene like that and make it very heavy-handed, and in this it wasn't. But, I mean, that's the thing, is that it I think it really makes you feel for a lot of the people going through. Like, even, you know, what's his face? Lewis. I mean, you feel for that guy. You feel for that guy. I mean, that guy needed help and he couldn't get it and he wouldn't listen to anybody and he meets a tragic end. Obviously, the stuff that he's doing is horrible, and it's funny how you mentioned like he's sort of like the anti-Punisher in this. But the thing is in those episodes where he's going crazy, there's a lot of people that say it. And you know, I'm thinking, you know, is the Punisher really any better in a way?
Right.
Like, he's just driven by another kind of madness. You know what I mean? And maybe he's able to continue. So it's just, there's a lot of really good, interesting things in the show. But there's a lot of things that happen that make you really sympathize for the characters in a lot of ways, even ones that you're not necessarily even supposed to be. Well, you know, I don't know. I think Lewis, you are supposed to sympathize for him because you see that he's going down a bad path and there's just nothing you can do to help him, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And you see kind of where it's going, and it just, well, at first I didn't. At first I was like, oh, this went in a direction I did not expect. And then, you know, sort of as he goes down that path, it becomes worse and worse and worse. And you keep thinking, like, is somebody going to come in to step this guy? I mean, to help this guy out? Are they going to step in to help this guy out? And then it turns out that no one's able to, and he becomes sort of a villain for a while. And it's just, it's kind of mind-boggling because you sort of do feel like, oh, you know, somebody might have been able to help this guy. I don't know. So it's really interesting because, again, on another show, that would be a very cardboard cutout character. You might not sympathize for him. The message might just be like, oh, guns bad, everything bad. And, you know, that's not what they did with Lewis. And that's kind of not what they do with Frank Castle.
Mm-hmm. It's just got, for a show that's has so many explosions and fist fights, it has a lot of subtlety when it comes to acting and script writing. It's pretty amazing. It's really something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really funny because I was talking to, you know, Corey. I was texting back and forth with him.
Yeah.
And he's like, he hasn't had a chance to watch it. I think he's still on the Defenders or trying to do the Defenders, but he you know, we were chatting a little bit about the Punisher, and I said to him, you know, I've never been a fan of the Punisher, like, as a character. I've read some stories, but I've never been a big fan of the character, but I am a big fan of this show. And I really, yeah, I mean, I loved it from beginning to end. And it's definitely up there as one of my favorites, you know, of Marvel shows. And I honestly think that if I had the time, which I don't, it would be very much the sort of thing that I would just love to go back and rewatch, you know.
I don't think I could rewatch it. Man, I think it's too intense
for you.
Yeah, it was way too intense for me.
I loved about it. It's intense. Yeah.
I did. I loved every moment of it, but I don't think I can go back and watch it.
It's kind of like skydiving for you, huh? Like, I went skydiving and I was like, that was great. I had fun. I'll never do it again.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I just felt like they did it. It was great. But again, you know, taking in that kind of subject matter in that kind of form where it's tough. I mean, it's a lot. I mean, the most violent stuff I watch is, you know, kung fu movies and pro wrestling.
Sure.
And in pro wrestling, you know, the guys are sort of trying to protect each other. They're not trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
But this dealt with so much stuff. I mean, I think that's why I was so happy to talk about it, because you feel like you need a group after watching this show.
That's funny. That's great. That's great. So I think we can both say that we really, really enjoyed The Punisher.
I think it's safe to say I'm really excited to see what they do next. I hope they could just learn from this and stay on this trend no matter what it is they do.
Yeah, I really think that this is a major bounce back from Iron Fist.
Oh, yeah.
I think that this has sort of restored my faith in the Marvel shows. I'm really hoping that they stay on this path, and I can't wait to see what happens next with this character. I hope they really do something else with him. And this, you know, I like Jon Bernthal before. But this is the project that for me has made me go like, oh, this guy's really great. He's awesome. And honestly, if this guy, Daniel Weber, does not get nominated for a bunch of acting awards, then something is wrong, because the guy that played Lewis was absolutely fantastic from beginning to end. I thought he was amazing.
I wonder how they'll promote that during
Award
season, or if they'll even touch it, because if you remove the word Punisher from it and you just presented it, you know, as its own thing,
yeah,
it stands up.
Yeah, I think so.
Some of the very best long form episodic television that's out there that's ever been created, I think. I was pleasantly surprised. I was really shocked that, you know, from top to bottom, you know, someone at Marvel or the production or whoever said, yeah, that's the way you're going to do it.
Yeah.
And then that's the way it's going to go down. And as fans, we freaking appreciate that. And that's all you got to do. Be true to the character. Add something good to the character. And in this case, I think they added a lot. There's a lot more to work with there now.
Yeah,
it was just a great show through and through. I really can't say enough about it, but I'm happy to take a break from it. I think it is hard watching at times, but it's a great ride.
Yeah, well, the thing is for me, we missed it. My wife and I, we missed the intensity of it. We missed the sort of like edge of your seat of it, and anything else was kind of a letdown. I don't know. We've kind of been like getting back into our other TV shows now again. And it's just not the same. I mean, The Punisher is a roller coaster ride. It keeps you going. It has its ups and its downs, but it ends up being a really fantastic, I think, grown up, intelligent, you know, ride in its own way. I mean, I think a lot of people will look at the violence and just be like, oh, that's like violent. But I think that this show has a lot to say about a lot of different things that are particularly relevant in our society today. And it's talking about things that no other Marvel show has talked about, and no other not a lot of other TV shows are talking about. And the fact that it's a Marvel sort of quote unquote superhero show that's addressing this, I think is absolutely fantastic. I think they took the Punisher, the what they could do with the Punisher, and they made it into something, you know, like almost new, and they fashioned it into something that was much more intelligent than anything that the comic has ever done. And that to me is impressive. I mean, this show kind of made me a bit of a Punisher fan because it shows sort of what you could do right with the character, using sort of the DNA of what came from the comics. So in any case, I think it's safe to say that you and I both love the Punisher. I enjoyed it. Hopefully there's a season two. Hey, by the time this podcast hits, tomorrow, Wednesday, apparently the Infinity War trailer is going to be debuting tomorrow at some point.
Oh, so are you kidding?
No, I'm not kidding. That's the rumor on the internets. We're going to have lots of Marvel stuff to celebrate. Yeah. I know that you and I are going to be texting each other back and forth like, did you see that? So
hopefully that's really happening tomorrow.
That's what I heard tomorrow. I think maybe the latest Thursday, but I heard tomorrow. So,
oh my God, these guys are making it really hard it's really hard to dislike anything they do. I mean, I really just almost feel someone was like, all right, listen, let's take a dump on Iron Fist just to keep him guessing.
Yeah, right, right. Wait, not everything can be perfect, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that trailer blows us away and it blows the people that are listening away, but we have not been talking about that. We have been talking about the Punisher, and this has been the Part-Time Fanboy Part 2. Episode of The Punisher. My name is Christian Horn, and I've been on the line with my good friend Ian Scheller, and we both love The Punisher. Not much else to say. Thank you for listening, and we will be back soon with another episode of Part-Time Fanboy, and hopefully you all enjoyed your Thanksgiving, and thanks for listening, and have a great week. Bye.
Time, sad boy.